Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today's show will be guest-hosted by Henry Magala, who will be interviewing two of the four candidates running for the La Mesa City Council, Patricia Dillard and Laura Lothian. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Henry Migala with East County Magazine, here with Patricia Dillard, who's running for one of the two seats in the La Mesa City Council. Born and raised in San Diego, Patricia's professional life has spanned over 40 years, including currently serving as the vice chair of the Community Police Oversight Board for La Mesa. Welcome, Patricia. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry. It's good to be with you.
Well, we're grateful for making time, because I know as a candidate, you're exceedingly busy, especially on top of your family and professional life. So thank you. So I mentioned just a little bit about your background. Tell us about your background, how you got here, and what motivated you to run for the La Mesa City Council.
Yes, I've lived in La Mesa for over 27 years, and we've always been passionate about our family and education and, you know, doing right by our children. So we raised them in a rooted environment. They attended all three schools here in La Mesa, which is La Mesa Dale Elementary, La Mesa Middle School, which is now La Mesa Arts Academy. And all three graduated from Helix High School. And now I'm just pretty much my husband and I are empty nesters. And we, you know, have always given back in one way or another to our community. My husband was a pastor for almost 15 years. And so we've always found ways to try to help people. It's just really in our hearts to do so. The most recent thing that I have done with the city of La Mesa is I do serve as the vice chair for the Community Police Oversight Board. It's going on 3 years now. We've worked really hard with the police department, especially with the chief of police, who has really leaned in to listen to us. And we wanted to lean in and listen to him and the concerns of the police department, and also listen to our community and, you know, their expectations of the police department. And, you know, we've really come up with some really great ideas and are on a very good track with the police department to make sure that our residents, we're doing what our residents expect us to do, and that we are addressing more current issues that, you know, have arisen in the past several years in regarding to the police department. I will say that regarding the police department, that, you know, we've established a very good relationship, and that we have some excellent police officers who are providing excellent service to our community, and we're very proud of that. I also am the co-chair for the La Mesa Juneteenth and Friends event. We had our inaugural this year, and we were able to establish over 40 volunteers from our community, which I think is amazing in itself, that we had that many people that contributed their time, effort, and money to help put the event together. And when we held it, we were hoping, because we were listening to what the city was telling us, that, you know, hopefully we'll get like, you know, 250 people to attend, because it's brand new and nobody knows, you know, what's going to happen. And we ended up with almost 1500 people that attended the event. And we really focused the event on, of course, family fun and music, entertainment. We had the MLK choir that came, and we also had one of the singers sing solos, and people were just absolutely paralyzed in listening to her. She had this most beautiful voice. And we also involved a lot of children, and we thought that was important. And then we introduced history throughout the park. It was held at MacArthur Park, and we were just ecstatic. Our residents were so happy. And our vendors were excited about it. Between the food and all of the vendors, our residents and people from outside the city of La Mesa came in and really supported our vendors. And they all said that they can't wait for next year, that they would definitely be there. And the city also told us they couldn't wait to meet with us again so they could tell us, you know, that you need to expect double the amount in the next year. So we're very excited about that as well. So it's been all about community for me. It's been about making sure that we do things to help bring our city together and that we share in our diversity as much as we can and really celebrate one another's in, diversity, you know, and just really focus on what's important for La Mesa. And that's why I'm running. I want to take it to the next level. And I know that if I serve as a city council member, I will be able to do that and make changes for the city of La Mesa.
I paralyze people with my singing also, but probably for very different reasons. I went to the Juneteenth event. It was a beautiful, wonderful community reconnecting event. It was very nice.
Thank you. Thank you. We got great press that day, by the way.
I wrote about it.
Yeah, we were on the front page of the Union Tribune the very next day. And we also got coverage from every network on the evening news that night of Juneteenth. And so we were very pleased, very shocked. And it was just such a positive experience. And we look forward to the next event and sharing more history with people. And, you know, not in a preachy way either. You know, everything was done very professionally and, you know, displayed where people could learn what they wanted to learn. It wasn't forceful at all. And it was really about the celebration of the Jubilee and then people understanding exactly why they need to join in and celebrate with us.
Excellent. Thank you for that. I went through your website and saw some of your priorities. I wanted to talk to you about some of the issues you have identified for yourself as priorities. Your number one was public safety. La Mesa experienced the social unrest in May 2020 in the riot and the arson. What do you see as the underlying cause of that unrest?
You know, people have different information about that. We actually started our task force way before that. We started out, we were holding public meetings starting in January of 2020. There was a lot of things that were going on nationwide, not necessarily directly in La Mesa during that time. So I think that when that actually happened in La Mesa, I think there were a lot of people that were very surprised, very disappointed, and upset for many reasons. But what I generally understood it to be turned out to be a little bit different once we got more concrete information. We received an after action report, which is a, you know, it's this a book this thick, so you don't want to really necessarily read it. But we were able to meet with that law firm to get more explanation, more clarification, I should say, on exactly what their outcome was in regards to that event. And I also, you know, I walk, knock, and talk to voters. And I got a lot of feedback from them, which I thought was especially important, especially the people who actually could see what was going on because they live up in the hills above like the Vaughn Shopping Center. And they were able to describe to me exactly what they saw. And that was a peaceful protest that went on for some time and then suddenly turned into a violent situation because there were people that came from outside of the city of La Mesa and were specifically there to cause problems and cause violence. And so it was just a super unfortunate event that happened during the time that there was a lot of unrest throughout the nation. And, you know, some of those cases are still in court and cannot be discussed now that I serve as the vice chair for the Community Police Oversight Board. But I will say that working with the chief, we feel very confident that We have worked very hard to make sure that that never happens again for our city. And we do have a new chief of police. The one that was, you know, in that position was the prior chief of police. And so everything has been readdressed, reassessed, and we have worked hard to move forward to make sure that we're doing everything we can with our community. You know, I think that sometimes too, no one knows that anything is wrong until something happens, right? And then, of course, it's like, what? So the fact that the community is quieter, that crime is down, and that, you know, we've had a chance to meet a very hardworking, dedicated police officers, I feel good that the work that we have done has really helped. Because the thing is that you don't want to make our police officers feel like they're not wanted or they're not needed, because what would the community be without public safety? And public safety is our police department and our fire department. If we don't have those two services available for our city, what in the world do we have? Their focus is to take care of us. And we want to make sure that they know that we care about them and that we need them here and that we appreciate their service that they do provide for our city.
Is the police department reformed? If not, what else do you think needs to be done?
We have so much going for us right now. It's a combination of the city, the police department, and the fire department all working in unison to do everything that they can to protect our city. There's been a lot of programs that have been implemented, especially for our issues with homelessness. And there's other programs that are going on in the city to help with people that are struggling to, you know, that are actually on the verge of homelessness. So there's a lot of services that the city has been making available, and that has helped. But obviously, we need to collaborate more and do more for our city and our outlying cities, because they affect us, especially when it comes to homelessness. But overall, I think that we're on the right track. I don't know if you're ever done, you know, where you can say, okay, this is it, we're done here, because there's always something that comes up that we feel that we need to address. But when I have conversations with Chief Sweeney, the one thing that I see that he is a person who thinks ahead. He's experienced enough that he knows what could possibly be issues, and he's ahead of it so that it doesn't become an issue. And I think that, you know, if you're a police officer, you certainly know things that other people who don't specialize in criminal justice or policing would ever know. And so it's great to have other information coming from police officers who actually can share their experiences with you so that you could see what may be needed ahead of time for the police force. And I really like the way that the chief addresses those issues before they become a big issue. So the Community Police Oversight Board is important because it keeps everybody on their toes, that they're constantly working and looking ahead to address anything that is needed now and anything potentially.
Your second big issue is homelessness, as everybody and everywhere is the issue. You say on your website, we can solve homelessness and housing insecurity in our community. How?
Yeah, it's a big job. Part of it is what I mentioned before, collaboration with nonprofit organizations who specialize in homelessness. But I would like more emphasis on mental health. I believe that it is an underlying big part of homelessness. It's something that we can't ignore any longer. It should actually be a part of any homeless situation. People should be entitled to get help, get counseling. I do have a brother who is homeless, and it's a struggle for me. It's very hard for me. It's very painful to talk to him, who, you know, I know to be, you know, the person that I grew up with, which was a very smart individual who has always done extremely well in the field of construction. He remodeled homes, helped build homes. He's very, very highly talented. But now that he's homeless, I feel like when I talk to him, you know, in his mind, he feels that he's okay. He'll just like stay right here and do this thing, whatever this thing is. And for me, I'm looking at him like, are you crazy? You're homeless. Like, what are you talking about? You know? And I think that, to be honest with you, he's scared. He's scared. And I see this in a lot of homeless people. They're scared. They're scared to talk to you. They don't know who to trust. They can't find their way where it would be comfortable for a change. And so I think that counseling and talking over a period of time can help a lot of people overcome that. And I think that when you're talking about homelessness, it should be working with a person or a family, whoever that might be, from the beginning to the end. You know, you don't just throw them in some motel room for 24 hours or whatever, you know, give them something to eat, and then they go back out to create the whole cycle all over again. We need to have more 100% affordable housing for those who are on the verge of homelessness, who are working but yet still not able to make ends meet. And I also believe that we need key housing for people who want the help. They want to get out of that situation and are willing to allow professionals that can work with them from the beginning to the end so that they can get up on their feet and become productive citizens in our community or wherever it is that they decide to live after the fact. But, you know, you can't do it with just throwing them, you know, a hot meal and, you know, giving them a room for a night. It just needs to be more cohesive. And the thing is with La Mesa is we have the highest trolley stops per capita in the county of San Diego. So you have people coming in from El Cajon and Santee and Lemon Grove and Spring Valley and, you know, Encanto, different places. They can ride in, stop over for a while, and then go to another city. And so we need to collaborate with other cities that have specialties in different areas, you know, because it could be spousal abuse or just abuse of some kind. It could be a lot of variety of different things that cause a person to be homeless or on the verge of homelessness. And so we need to collaborate as a regional base so that we're helping one another. So if these people are going back and forth between La Mesa and other cities, that we're getting the people help that are wanting to get the help. I don't know if you'll ever eliminate homelessness, but we can definitely reduce it and help the people who want to get helped.
It was a good segue because you mentioned needing affordable housing. What's your view on the appropriate scale, height, density of housing in La Mesa? You know, how do you balance the need of more homes versus the concerns for overparking, community character, and preserving the charm in a historic downtown district, you know, the community character of nice La Mesa, you know, with the need for increased density of housing and higher rise housing? And how do you balance that?
Well, I don't think there's just one way. I think that there's a couple of different ways. One of them is that we can't stop people from coming to La Mesa, just like you can't stop people from moving wherever they want to move. This is a free country. But we understand why they want to come to La Mesa, because that's why people love La Mesa. It's a great place to be. And there's a lot that La Mesa has to offer. So for those who want to live here, there is a struggle with a median household, because when you talk about affordable housing, it's really supposed to be that you don't pay more than 30% of your income. Well, if your income is $50,000 a year and you are looking for housing that only requires for you to pay 30% of the $50,000 budget, you still don't qualify to get a place in a lot of places here in La Mesa. So that's why I mentioned having 100% affordable housing as an option. However, when it comes to new build, I still think that we can do things that address several issues. One is it addresses our environment, it addresses public safety, and it also addresses our ability to make more walkable spaces or bikeable spaces and use less cars, less, lower our emissions here in La Mesa. Since we have to build, if we build more along the trolley lines, we eliminate a lot of the issues with traffic. If you have a construction project where you can only have one car per unit, then that encourages people who move into that apartment unit, for instance, you know, yes, they can have a car, but it also encourages them to walk and catch the trolley. And if you have it on the trolley line and you have it near the trolley stations, that's helpful and keeps down, you know, the traffic potentially with the city. In addition to that, include affordable housing in those builds. And like I said, some of them can be 100% and some of them can be percentages of the build. You know, we have to build, and so we can do that. Another thing is thinking about first-time home buyers. You know, I did loans for a very long time, and it was always a dream for my husband and I to own a home. And, you know, we bought our first home in another area that we could afford and then lived there long enough to accumulate the appreciation so that we could use it for our next home, and eventually ended up in La Mesa 27 years ago. We can now build condos and townhomes to address the walkability. Yes, downtown La Mesa is a great popular place for people to go, but it shouldn't be the only place. We have the ability to build where there's vacant lots and dilapidated buildings that are sitting on vacant lots or sitting on on lots that aren't being used at all, where we can go in and possibly build condos and townhomes in those areas and apartments and make another walkable location like the west end of El Cajon Boulevard. There's a lot of empty lots there in between businesses and other things that are going on there, small squares, schools, et cetera. And I would like to see another area for people to be able to have walkable, bikeable spaces with charging stations, as well as supplied with our downtown, you know, the village. Don't break what's not broken. I mean, we have a great downtown location for people to go, but we have over 63,000 people that live in La Mesa. So we need to have other places for people to feel comfortable to go as well, because we need more businesses here and we need businesses to be able to thrive here so that we can offer our communities, the community of La Mesa, everything that people that live here would like to have. And we prefer options. You don't have to go one place or another. You have options, and people love that. They love that ability. So I think we can do it all. We may not get there in a year or two, but we can get there with a plan.
Your next issue is, of course, like many people, the economy. You write that I will work to build pathways to good paying middle class jobs through traineeships, apprenticeships, continuing education, and other programs. How does a city council member do that when it seems to be the realm of the education sector rather than the city council?
Yeah, the way that I envision doing it is to work through educational avenues like our local schools, our library. What I would like to see is people that can have ways to be informed on what's available to them, especially through unions. Unions offer full-time work with training and full benefits, health care, dental care, eye care, and they also include retirement accounts, pensions. You can actually get your training while being paid with a lot of these unions and get, you know, certified in different fields. There's so many different fields where people can apply for these jobs, get these jobs, and have what you call a working family wage, where you can afford to pay your rent or your mortgage, and you can afford to put food on the table and take care of your children, and you can afford to, you know, buy a car or whatever is needed for yourself and your family. And so there are ways to help connect a lot of these unions that are working right here, not just in La Mesa, but throughout the county of San Diego, where people can get jobs. Some of them, you don't even have to have a diploma. Some of them you do, but there's many to choose from. And I would like to see more people who maybe, you know, not everybody can go to college. Not everybody wants to go to college, but there are still things that are out there that pay living wages, where they can still do well and support themselves and their families.
The other thing you mentioned is, I will work to ensure that our local working families have access to well-paying local jobs. How do you do that?
Well, just like I said, we have jobs that are right here in La Mesa that people can apply for. You know, think about it. We have Kaiser here. We have tons of businesses here, both large and small.
But as a city council member, how do you make that happen? That seems to be the efforts of the industry.
It is true. But, you know, you can do that through network marketing. There's a lot of businesses that need to be supported here in La Mesa, and they need to hire people. And, you know, there's ways to use network media to get the word out about those businesses, and also tag other businesses through either Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. People do see those and hook up with, you know, maybe a particular job that they would consider applying for. And also, too, there's groups that are in like places like Facebook, where they're business groups. You can join those networks and learn about what, you know, different businesses are doing and talk to the businesses that are here. I mean, I'm a person that if I want a job, I'm going to do everything that I can to get it. And I'm not going to take no for an answer. And I'm going to keep talking to people until I find a way to get myself hired. And everyone has to work to get what they, you know, what they want in their lives. And I believe that we can encourage them through local schools, our public schools, as well as through our network that we already have right here in La Mesa with our businesses.
Your last big issue is education. And you talked about on your website that our kids lost a lot during the pandemic close down. And you mentioned that the city should play a role in filling the gap between the school and the home. How does the city fill the gap between the school and the home?
I think that there are grants that we can make available to help with students who, number one, either for whatever reason, did not have internet connection, because that was one of the biggest issues that people talked about. Unfortunately, even internet connection and having the ability to do school online wasn't ideal for many, many children. And so that's what I mean by the loss. But we have ways that we can communicate with our educators to make sure that we are filling the gaps that where they say is needed, where we can use grants to help subsidize for people that are in need, especially when it comes to those specific gaps that the educators are telling us that they are experiencing in trying to help and make sure we're getting to all of the children that need that help.
What are your most significant endorsements, and where can people get more information about your candidacy or volunteering or donating to it?
Well, you can go to patriciadillard.com. You can click on donate or you can click on volunteer. I'm endorsed by Dr. Akilah Weber. I was last year. She has never left my side. She's continued to endorse me and felt that I was the right person to fill in her shoes. And I do promise to continue to do the work that she did, which was to focus on the people of La Mesa and continue to help them in any way that I can as a city council member. I'm also endorsed by the mayor, Dr. A, as people fondly like to call him. And also, I'm endorsed by almost the entire city council. I am endorsed by Sarah Jacobs, who is our congresswoman for this entire area. And I'm also endorsed by our state senator, Tony G. Atkins. She also has endorsed me, as well as Dr. Shirley Weber, who is our secretary of state. A lot of community members support me and endorse me. and are looking forward to me working on their behalf in the city of La Mesa. It's a long list.
Is there anything you want to finally say for our listeners and readers?
I just want to say that there are two positions open. I hope that you will consider choosing me to be on that one of those seats. And I think that you should know that I'm a person that cares about people. And I want to continue to take care of the people of La Mesa as best I can, and that I will work very hard to make sure that I'm doing the best that I can. I'm not a perfect person, but I am a hardworking person. And so I will stay dedicated and focused on taking care of our community. And you should know that I am rooted here in La Mesa, always been supportive of La Mesa, and our kids love La Mesa. And even though they're grown and out of the house, they still love La Mesa. And so we're going to stay right here and continue to help and assist in any way we can. And I appreciate their support and vote.
Well, we've enjoyed our time with La Mesa City Council candidate, Patricia Dillard. Thank you for your time. You've been very gracious. You've been very selfless with your time. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me. I really appreciate you. And I hope you have a great rest of the day.
And you too.
Thank you.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
Hello, this is Henry Migala, guest hosting for East County Magazine, here with our very special guest today, La Mesa City Councilwoman Laura Lothian. Hello, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
I'm elated you're with us. Thank you for making time. It wasn't easy for you. I know you juggled a lot of important things.
Well, thank you for your flexibility, too.
So you're a longtime La Mesa resident. You're a real estate agent. You're a mom. You're a current city council member running for re-election for one of two available seats on the La Mesa City Council. So please tell me a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are today, and what motivated you to run for city council originally, because you've already been on a term. So from being just a regular resident and citizen to wanting to be an elected official.
Okay, so Laura Lothian, you are right, longtime La Mesa resident, La Mesa mom. I have been a La Mesa realtor since 2002, so over 20 years. I do have the distinction of having sold the most homes maybe ever, but for sure in the last 20 plus years. And so I always like to say it's easy to sell this product because I love this city and so many people want to live here. And I'm a big cheerleader for La Mesa. I ran for city council because I feel that not only La Mesa, but cities all over the place, they're forgetting that they're governing cities. And all of a sudden, elected representatives seem to be, they're like global citizens. It feels like the United Nations. And it's like, no. It's about police permits and potholes. Take care of your citizens. I want La Mesa to be safe, so support your police. I want La Mesa to be clean and beautiful. No litter, no graffiti, no giant chunks of potholes. I want businesses to look forward to working in La Mesa. Therefore, make the permit process easier, more expedited. So my focus has been local, local, local. And for this last year that I've been on the city council, I have actually done quite a few things to improve La Mesa. In fact, I've even created a poster of my accomplishments. And that's why I ran.
You know, that's a great segue, and people should know I didn't prompt you on that. But I was going to ask you, what are your most significant accomplishments for being a one-term council member?
Okay, so it wasn't one term. I've only been on for less than a year. So last year, I won a special election to complete the Akilah Weber's last year of her four-year term. So I've only been on the city council for less than a year. But when you're in real estate, you are results-driven because it's a commission-only job. So if you get a problem, fix it. You have to bring your project to a close, or no one gets paid, the seller doesn't sell their house, the buyer doesn't get their house. So your DNA starts to become very, very get the job done. So in my 10 or 11 months that I've been on there, one of the things I've done is I've shined a light on the permit process. La Mesa, unfortunately, has a reputation of being a very hard place to open a business, to add an ADU, to remodel your kitchen. it's just an arduous process. And so last January or February, I asked the city to provide something called a permit activity report. And in it was this thick. There was 330 permits in the queue. So I'm randomly going through it and I'd see someone's been waiting 26 months for an 89 square foot bathroom addition. And I'm like, okay, come on, what is this? And I'm calling people and they're telling me how frustrated they are. So I bring my research and findings to our city manager, Greg Himura. And I said, Greg, this is not good. And he agreed. So Greg Himura has been working on something called a culture of yes. And he is mandating training with all staff in the city. And he wants La Mesa to become a place where people want to do business. They want to add that ADU. They want to do this. And so with my prompting, I have the city council agreeing 5-0, every quarter, a permit activity report is going to come out. And we're going to see how they're doing. And there's nothing like exposure that makes people perform better. We also, because of my emphasis and concentration on permits, we hired a permit consulting firm, which kind of makes me roll my eyes because everything seems to be consultants. But they are coming up with a blueprint for better customer service, expedited permits, and how we can just improve the whole experience. So that's one of my top priorities that I am on and still continuing to do. Another thing I did, which is kind of interesting, is our city seems to be obsessed with climate action plans, of which I am not. However, I'm on the city council and I'm listening and I'm hearing and watching. But the entire time they are kind of grandstanding on their climate action plans, they're drinking out of single-use disposable plastic water bottles, all of them. And so I prompted them to stop that habit. So for the last 6 months and forever, you are not going to see individual single-use plastic water bottles at city council meetings. We're done. It's now glasses and water pitchers. That's thousands of bottles not being thrown away. And it's making us look like, you know, we're practicing what we preach. I'm really proud of that. And it should have come out of another council member, not me. Another thing that I did, anything that the LMPD has requested, and it hasn't been a lot, I've been a yes vote because the movement to demonize or defund police across the country is why the crime is spiking all over the place. La Mesa, thank goodness, is still a town that appreciates and respects its police force. And I'm not the only one. We all do. And so I'm also a very proud supporter of the police. I'm also very vocal about it. I don't pretend like, oh, the police, I love them. And every chance I get to be with them and promote them, I do. Also, too, SB 1383, that is the new recycling. It's required for green man recycling, where your food waste has to go into your green bins. The fines for violating that was $200, $400, and $1,000. I thought that was crazy. I fought to reduce them. They are now $25, $50, and $100. So as people are learning that new law, they shouldn't be penalized. So that's another accomplishment. Another funny one is pickleball stripes. We had a tennis court at La Mesita underutilized. I know how many hundreds of people play pickleball. And so I lobbied to have stripes added. It cost us almost nothing. Now we've got four more courts. I was here last Sunday. There was like 60 people playing and they're beautiful. Also, when you've got activity going on and people doing wholesome things at parks, less crime, less homelessness. So let me see, anything else? Oh my God, the one I just had this week. I'm the co-chair of American Rescue Plan Act Money. I've been lobbying for six or seven months to have money from ARPA funds given to the small business community and for litter pickup. I got a 5-0 victory this week. $500,000 is going to La Mesa small businesses. It's called the Commercial Facade Improvement Program. And $100,000 is going to litter pickup. So once again, local, local, local.
Wow. Thank you for that. You mentioned something that's interesting because it's given the Florida, the hurricane that's just wiped out Florida, but the climate action plan, you're not an advocate of that. Why is that?
Well, okay. First of all, I think that if there is a quote climate crisis and the science is not settled on that, then you would have to ask yourself, why does a La Mason have to give up their gas stove? Why does a La Mason have to give up their gas water heater or gas car when you've got a country like China producing, you know, billions, they're doing billions of tons of coal burning. So I don't understand on the world stage why there aren't, if global warming and all that is an existential threat, why aren't there riots against China? Why aren't there boycotts against China? Why isn't there pressure bringing China to the table? But instead, China gets this pass. And the funny part is they make all of our solar panels and they make all of our, do a lot with the wind tunnels and of course the batteries for the cars and all that, yet they don't buy their own product. So they're building it, we're buying it, they're doing gas, oil, coal. So it just doesn't make sense. And so I think, like, I was upset a month ago, the city council voted, not me, but they voted to pay a climate action plan consultant $100,000, a climate consultant. And one of his goals was climate equity. And I'm thinking, like, why is La Mesa doing this? This is not anything to do with it's like fiddling while bad things are happening. You know, we've got, I talked to two major business retailers in La Mesa this week. Big. Like, everyone would recognize who I'm talking about, the massive stores. And they're talking to me about shoplifting. They're talking about fires, vandalism, assaults on their staff and customer base. And we're like, okay, whatever, and not dealing with that. And then we give a consultant $100,000 for climate equity. It's not common sense. So that's where I stand on that.
Okay. Thank you. I went on your website to look at your priorities. And like everybody recognizes, homelessness is an issue everywhere. So can you highlight the things you've done as a city council person already to address homelessness in La Mesa?
Well, the two emails that I received this week from the major retailers are begging for help with the homeless. And so I spoke today with the chief of police and the president of the La Mesa Police Officers Association. And I go, more patrols, maybe just more patrols would help. That's one thing. The second thing, and I'm drafting it now and I have not sent it, but I'll say it to you. My city council colleague, Councilman Jack Hsu, he's on the board of SANDAG and MTS. And so Mr. Hsu, or Councilman Hsu, has been promoting free trolley. He thinks that if the trolley is free, that's going to increase ridership because the ridership of our trolley system is very low. We don't live in a New York City or Chicago or Boston. When I went to college in Boston, everybody took the T, but here nobody does. And so the reason nobody does is because it is filled with homeless people and it is filled with, like, every time I've ridden the trolley from La Mesa to downtown, I have witnessed an incident that was extremely unpleasant. And the last time, 2 years ago, which made me stop riding the trolley altogether, was a man pulled out a knife, a huge knife, and he was threatening another man who kept saying, "I don't know you, bro," but he was doing this next to my significant other's head. And I thought he was going to plunge it in his temple. It was terrifying. And when the trolley stopped, I had the guy arrested, but it's disgusting riding on the trolley. And if you make it permanently free, already they're riding and no one's paying for it. But if you actually promote it as free, all you're going to get are the kind of people on the trolley that other people don't want to go on the trolley. So I'm going to ask Jack Hsu what he should be promoting as a board member for MTS and SANDAG. And this could help a lot. Start charging for trolley rides. It's five, I think it's $2.50 each way, $5 for a round trip or something. Not a lot of money. But if you enforced it, homeless people are not going to spend $5 to ride a trolley. And they are using that trolley to infiltrate La Mesa. Everyone you talk to, these retailers, they say 100% of their homeless problems is because of the trolley. So I think the trolley should be more expensive, not free. I also advocated for something very radical that the state's not ready to hear yet, but I'll tell it to you because it's going to happen one day. Real estate in San Diego and La Mesa, Los Angeles, Malibu, San Francisco is extraordinarily expensive. People pay millions of dollars to live in houses, condos. They pay huge taxes, HOA fees if you're in a city. And how unfair is that, that you are a productive member of society and you have to walk around human waste and you have to deal with homeless people as you're walking your kids to school or walking your dog. And we're sitting there setting up magnets for more homeless. Here's more homeless shelters. Here's homeless hotels. Here's homeless outreach. Here's homeless food. Hey, we'll give you rides places. We're making it easy to be homeless. And when you do that, and you've got people paying that kind of money, it's, again, no common sense. There should be a massive campus or compound or a closed base somewhere that has acreage and buildings and facilities and utilities where you could house the homeless, medical, counseling, detoxing, training, whatever, and sit there and say, we're going to build it where the real estate is less. and then pull them out of our cities that are getting destroyed by homeless people.
Many people talk about, you kind of good transition to about affordable housing, needing to get more housing. What's your view on the appropriate scale or height and density for housing projects in La Mesa?
Not a fan of high density apartments. Again, that's part of these climate action plans and Green New Deals. There are people in power, starting with the World Economic Forum, that envisions a country or countries where people don't live in single family residences anymore. We don't have our lovely leafy neighborhoods, and we all live in high density monolithic apartment buildings on public transit. So we live in our apartment, we hop on the trolley to go out to see friends or dinner or go to work. And there's that lifestyle living. And if you look at pictures of Moscow and Russia, and you see those buildings just congested on train tracks, I don't want to see that happen here. So no, I don't like it. I personally, it took me 3 years to get permits to build an ADU in my backyard. My friend and client built one 3 years ago for under $100,000. Mine's going to cost $350,000. That's why housing is so unaffordable. Permits, bureaucracy, regulations, the time it takes. During this whole year that I've been on there, all these people I've been talking to who have not gotten permits, they're waiting month after month, they're hemorrhaging money, they're going bankrupt. It's a disgrace.
How do you balance the need for more homes versus concerns over parking, community character, and preserving the charm of the historic downtown district?
That's the thing. Like right now, there's an apartment building going up at the old police station. It is going to be exclusively low-income housing. So it's not a percentage, it's exclusively low income. And they also have not enough parking spaces. There's not like a parking space per unit. I can't remember what the ratio is, half a parking space to a unit, something like that. Because they think that people are gonna live in these apartments, and because it's next to a trolley, they don't need a vehicle. Well, I know that everybody, no matter what, we live in such a place where everything is so expansive. You can't have upward mobility. You can't have autonomy without a car. So no matter how much a car costs, no matter how much fuel costs, they're going to find a way to have a car. I go to Mexico all the time, and I see shacks with no running water, no electricity, no plumbing. And instead of a window with glass, it's a window with a sheet. And no matter how poor it is, there's still a car in front. Because if they don't have that car, they can't get any work and they will die. And so my feeling is that building these units and pretending they're not going to have cars is ridiculous. And we're going to have total congestion downtown. There won't be enough parking. It's like when you go to North Park or South Park and you're trying to go to a little restaurant and you just give up because there is no parking. And then we're also the Randall Lamb building that was burned down in the riots. That is getting also on the books, is, and it's up for a vote, but I don't know how that's going to go. But it's another 100% exclusively low-income housing project. And this time, there's four levels of low-income. This is the lowest of the lowest. It's the most impoverished people. And I just don't know why La Mesa has to aim there. Like, it's a perfect spot for a boutique hotel with a rooftop restaurant and bar. I want to class up La Mesa, not keep doing congested apartment buildings and pretend like they don't drive cars and they take the trolley. It doesn't make any sense. And mark my words, a few years from now, we're going to be reading about there was another shooting at the Vons parking lot, and that kind of stuff's going to happen too.
One of your issues on your sites is supporting small businesses, and your priority is to cut regulations and unfair mandates that destroy jobs. Can you give examples of what kinds of mandates destroy business, cut jobs that the city council is in charge of?
Okay, here's one right now. I'm not going to name the restaurant because I don't want to give it any kind of negativity or hurt this person's relationship with the city. There is a very popular restaurant in La Mesa, and it has a very attractive outdoor storage space. It's 5 feet by 6 feet, 30 square feet. It blocks nothing. It's in line with stairs that go into this restaurant. So there is no reason not to have it. The plans that were approved for this restaurant do not include storage inside the restaurant. So this is the only place that this restaurateur can put empty kegs, cartons, a wastebasket, whatever. The city is hounding this person to get rid of this storage space. I actually have a meeting next week with the city manager, assistant city manager, to ask them, why is it that two retailers contacted us saying that they are being assaulted by homeless people? They have shoplifting that they is unsustainable. Someone had a knife pulled on them last week at one of our grocery stores. Why is all of this happening? All of this very uncomfortable, impossible way of doing business happening over here, yet the city's focusing on this little storage space that's actually very attractive. This restaurateur has meetings with the city, the fire department taking pictures. It's crazy. So we're hounding a productive business and not helping businesses in need. That has to stop. And that's one of my focuses. The other thing also is this ARPA money. It's commercial facade improvement program. There are restaurants and little retail shops that have peeling paint, old signs, tattered awnings. This is going to help them improve their curb appeal, which will improve their customer traffic and also the surrounding area. So that's another thing I'm doing that's very pro-business. Also, when that website was built, and it still stands true to this day, when COVID, when all these businesses were closed, not all, all the big guys got to stay open, but the little tiny dress shops and the little tiny taco shops, they were forced to close and they suffered. And I felt that if you're a citizen, you don't have a lot of things you can do. You can leave. It's hard to fight, quote, City Hall. But if you are City Hall, you sit there and go, wait a minute, this is a really bad policy. We've got to do some sort of civil disobedience. We have to tell Sacramento, your idea is crazy. We're not going to bankrupt all these people. And that's what that was when I built that website, is I've never seen so much suffering in my life. There was a woman that had a hair salon and she was telling her story and she's holding her newborn baby and she's sobbing. She goes, I'm going bankrupt. I don't have money for anything. And she became like a criminal because she started cutting hair behind closed doors and dark drapes. Our government did that to us. That's unforgivable.
La Mesa, as you know, you alluded to it, experienced some social unrest. What do you see as the underlying causes of that event, that unrest? What led to that?
Well, I think that 2020 was the craziest year probably in American history. So everyone had been imprisoned in their homes and apartments. We had the horrific live, you know, everyone saw the death of George Floyd. It's so uncomfortable. I've only seen it once. I can't watch it again. And it spurred an amazingly high amount of anger. And so when we had our own, you know, George Floyd mini incident, it became a perfect opportunity for people to express their frustration and anger. I got angry at the way the media portrayed the whole thing. They portrayed the police officer as conducting police brutality, which was an exaggeration. And then they depicted the riot as a protest, which was an understatement. So they magnified one thing and underplayed another. I wish journalism just played it straight. You know, there was an incident between a white cop and a black man off the trolley. Just describe the incident. Okay, don't call it brutality. And then the protest, don't call it a protest. If buildings are being burned and smashed, that's not a protest, that's a riot.
But the buildings being burned and smashed didn't happen until the police charged the group. So that happened many hours afterwards. So
Well, no, I was there.
Me too. I covered it for East County Magazine, and I covered it when the police shot me up with a bunch of paintball, and I wasn't anywhere near the group. I was off to the side.
But it was also thousands of people and total mayhem. If I ever found myself in the middle of a riot, you're covering it. So that's one thing. It's, you know, you could, you know, people get killed and, you know, journalists get killed in wars because they're covering battles. But if I were ever as just a citizen and I saw what was happening there, I would run away, because in that mayhem and chaos, rocks are flying, bricks are flying. Things are happening. And there were, when I was there, because I live here, I live here. So it was all around me. And I saw thousands of people, and they were definitely not La Masons. They were running like an orgy of fun. They weren't like crying and upset. They were whooping it up. They were running by the thousands. They were throwing stuff. And I think our cops were absolutely overwhelmed. And the fact that some people got hurt, well, it makes sense. It was a riot. And I don't think the cops instigated the riot, because hours earlier, my friends were calling and saying, hey, I live on University Place. There are people dressed in black. They are opening up the trunk of their car. They are taking out bricks and rocks and canisters of stuff. Are you going to do anything? So they were setting up for violence hours before it happened. It was so predictable. The mayor Santee, when he heard about the gatherings on the freeways, the National Guard, it didn't happen in Santee. We let our guard down.
And then the world started coming out of COVID and started coming out and having community events, and it kind of gave the whole world a reset button to come back together. And one of the first community events in La Mesa was Juneteenth. I was just wondering if you attended Juneteenth, and if you didn't, what have you done to rebuild race relations in La Mesa?
Yeah, okay, so June of 2022?
22, correct.
Okay, what have I done personally to build race relations?
Well, did you attend Juneteenth?
No, I didn't. First of all, I'm a real estate agent, so my Saturdays are very, very busy. But secondly, too, there's still anger in the air. I didn't want to be in a place where the clashes or something could happen. I think it turned out to be like a lovely little get together, but I'm not sure of the details of it. But no, I did not go. And I also don't subscribe to the racism, antagonism, obsession that so many people in government or so many people in the public do. Decades ago, race relationships were so much better. And I think that our media, and I think many members of our government, are whipping it up for selfish power reasons. It doesn't have to be that way. I had someone walk into my office, a white woman, and she said, I'm a realtor, and she walked in and she goes, hi. She goes, what's the racial makeup of La Mesa? And I'm like, I'm not sure. And then she goes, well, it seems too white to me. I don't want to live in a community that's too white. What? Who talks like that? So I wish I'd been prepared, because I would have said that's racist. But I didn't. I was just like stunned by someone's, talking like that. But I think that the more you like right now, one of the candidates is saying La Mesa has to do something about its white supremacy problem. La Mesa does not have a white supremacy problem. Someone's trying to manufacture a problem that does not exist.
Laura, you've been exceedingly gracious with your time, gracious with answering all the questions. We're getting close to the end of our time. Is there anything else you want our readers who are going to read it and listeners who are going to listen to this or watchers who are going to watch this to mm-hmm. still know about you or your campaign or your ambitions?
So I am, of course, running for re-election, and my focus is still going to remain local, police permits and potholes. However, given 4 years, I want to start building a coalition with other elected members throughout the county to start pushing back against some really bad policies coming out of Sacramento. As a real estate agent, I can't do a thing about that. As a citizen, I can't do a thing about that. But for example, there's a Prop 47, which you're probably familiar with, but it basically decriminalized crime. And what happened is I was at the League of Cities convention 2 weeks ago, and it was standing room only, double auditorium, and it was filled with police, retailers, prosecutors, judges. And everybody was talking about how smash and grabs, shoplifting, looting is now so saturated everywhere because there are no consequences now for all of these crimes. And then you've got some other states now who are saying, hey, guess what? We're not going to hold you for second degree murder. We're not going to hold you for carjacking. I don't want us to go there. And so Sacramento is not listening to anybody. They're just kind of in their own bubble. I think that if elected members, and that's something I want to work on in the next 4 years, we start congregating and building a group saying, hey, Sacramento, you may have fine intentions, but the consequences of your actions are killing communities. So I'm going to keep the focus local, but I also want to start having some effect on bad policies coming out of Sacramento.
What are your most significant endorsements, and where can people find out more information about your candidacy?
Oh, great question. I have a list of my endorsements right here. The La Mesa Police Officers Association endorsed me. La Mesa Firefighters, Republican Party of San Diego County, the Lincoln Club, which is a nonpartisan business club, Reform California, which is trying to change the policies in Sacramento, East County Chamber of Commerce, Mayor Bill Wells, the guy's a great guy, Mayor Richard Bailey, another guy I admire very much, Mayor John Minto. So Bill Wells is the mayor of El Cajon, Richard Bailey is the mayor of Coronado, John Minto is the mayor of Santee, Senator Brian Jones, Supervisor Joel Anderson, and San Diego County gun owners. So those are probably the most significant endorsements I have.
Laura, again, you told us you didn't have time. Thank you for squeezing us in. You've been very gracious with your time. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.